Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
All right, Buffalo Bills fans, welcome to the latest episode of Breaking Buffalo Rumblings. Anthony Marino, happy to be with you once again, talking everything Buffalo Bills, and happy to share this episode with you, bringing a special guest into the fold. We've got Greg Thompson from CoverOne.net. Greg, how you doing this evening?
Great. Doing really well tonight. Big fan of Breaking Buffalo Rumblings and some of your other compadres there in the Buffalo Rumblings network, and excited to jump on with you tonight.
Well, and the feeling is mutual. The work that you and Aaron Quinn do as it relates to the Cover One podcast, I check it out each and every time you guys have a new episode. And of course, love the work from Eric and Fernando and everyone there at CoverOne.net. You guys do some great work. And, you know, we've been talking about getting together to do a podcast for some time. I guess it takes a heartbreaking loss to the Cleveland Browns to actually get us to connect. But you know, Greg, I think we look at so much of the reaction to this game, and I don't want to look back too much, but I guess when you take a look at it, do you feel as fans were overreacting a little bit, or do you think there's a little bit of, you know, there's just something with this one that it's kind of playing into some of the doubts maybe that we had going into this game?
It's funny, you know, so much of life is about managing expectations and, you know, what you thought we were going into that. So I will say for some fans, they're drastically overreacting. For some, this is probably about right. You know, if you look back and let's pick out a game or two here, you know, what if Tennessee's kicker doesn't miss four kicks in that game? What if the Jets kicker doesn't miss the extra point and the field goal? You know, now it kind of bit us this time, and there was obviously a lot more than just Hauschka missing the two kicks. But, you know, we've been in a lot of those games. We just happen to have been on the good side of most of them. So having one bounce the other way in a game that was very winnable is painful. You know, it's difficult, but I don't know that it's, you know, exposed any horrible thing. It's just we had pulled a lot of these out, and that now makes it, you know, kind of difficult to be on the other end of that stick. But I think that we're still a capable team that's going to be in games the rest of the way. But we haven't blown anybody out yet, so I don't expect that to all of a sudden start.
Well, and really for the most part, too, on the flip side, haven't been blown out with the exception of the game against the Philadelphia Eagles where things unraveled a bit late. And to your point, if the Bills defense gets the stop to finish the game, right, when the Browns take over, the team is sitting at 7-2. Maybe some of the things that fans aren't happy about, it's, you know, they're still going to be there, right? It seems like this season there's enough things after each game that you'd like to see something different from maybe this coordinator or the quarterback or whatever it may be, and we can talk about some of that. But this is what the team has been. As you said, you look to the games against Tennessee, the win against Cleveland, the win against the Jets. I mean, so many of these, it's been maybe where you feel like, hey, I'm confident that the team is going to win this game, but not where you're really comfortable at any point in any of these matchups. I mean, is that just what this team is at this point?
Yeah, I think so. I think that they're a good team. They're obviously not a great team. I think that they're in a position where they're going to be competitive, and if things bounce the right way, we're going to win those games, and we've done that six times already. And that this Cleveland game is a perfect example. You know, what if they call that little jet sweep pop pass, they call it a fumble, and Jerry Hughes' play stood, and all of a sudden that turns into a sizable lead where we're up by 11 and probably pulling away for the win. You know, what if Hauschka makes those kicks? What if, you know, we're in a better position and we don't get kind of frazzled there with a minute to go and they come down and instead pull off a last minute touchdown like it was John Brown against the Jets? You know, there are plenty of little tidbits there that all of a sudden this could have bounced the other way. But, you know, I think that we're going to be in plenty of games the rest of the way and going to have some, there's plenty more fun to come.
Greg, you brought up Steven Hauschka, so let me ask you about him, right? Because normally we don't talk too much about kickers, although throughout the preseason, right, the punter conversation was front and center, I think, for so many people. But, you know, it's magnified now. I mean, Hauschka missing a 53-yarder is one thing. The 34-yard chip shot, it just seems for, you know, the better part of this season and also the finish of 2018 that Hauschka has just not been himself. And do the Bills have a problem at kicker right now, or is this just a matter of, again, trying not to overreact after a bad week?
Yeah. I mean, I spend a great deal of time trying to calm people down, you know, hey, you know, hold your horses. It's not as bad as it looks. I don't know. And I'm not as confident as I was previously. You know, we had a kicker who had broken the NFL record for consecutive 50-yard field goal makes. Steven Hauschka was absolutely a great luxury that you didn't have to worry about any kicking situation, and that, you know, coming off multiple seasons, you know, he was 29-33 in his first year with Buffalo. He was, I believe, at one point 21-22 prior to that dirty hit by Henry Anderson, and then finished the year really rough afterwards. And I was very reassured and told myself this year that we don't have to worry. He's going to be just fine coming into this year. And, you know, we're back to normal. And, you know, he's 8-13. And we have another missed extra point in there. He hasn't made a 50-yarder. He hasn't made anything over 46. And any of the four kicks longer than that, he's missed all four of them. So I would love to say that his history as at one point one of the most accurate kickers in NFL history means that we shouldn't have to worry about anything, and he's going to bounce back and he's going to be fine. And I do think that's in the range of possible outcomes, but I can't argue with the fact that right now he's making 61% of his kicks, and that in itself is not acceptable. So, you know, I'd like to think that he'll bounce back here, but I am a little bit more concerned than I was, say, a month ago.
Greg, I always try to be optimistic as a Bills fan, and I know you do as well. So I don't want this episode to come across as us focusing on too many of the negatives. But I think there have been some, and I don't even want to call them narratives, right? But certain areas where as fans, and again, we see different reactions. You know, Hauschka's performance has been one of them. I do want to run a couple of these by you. Again, I don't want it to make it sound like I'm cherry picking negative things here, but I think you do look at the loss to the Browns and maybe it magnified some of those things. Maybe it was a perfect storm of some of them all coming together in one game. And, you know, and again, the Bills lose by 3 points. So I want to get your take on a few. We talked about Hauschka. The other one is Levi Wallace, right? And Levi has been a great story for the Buffalo Bills, as, you know, going as a walk-on at University of Alabama, then an undrafted free agent to a starter, you know, looking like a diamond in the rough for the team in 2018, seems to be struggling a little bit in 2019. Again, kind of in that same vein, is it time for the Bills to maybe look to make a change, consider someone like Kevin Johnson, or is this just, listen, it's one game, Jarvis Landry's very talented, should we not be overreacting to this one?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's very similar to the opening comments. I think it depends on what your expectations are. I think Levi Wallace is a sound, an intelligent football player, very hardworking, is technique and is fundamentally sound, and he plays the scheme really well. When we do a good job of allowing Tre'Davious White to be isolated on an island and use some of the crazy range of somebody like, you know, Tremaine Edmonds and the you know, kind of cover up skills that somebody deep like Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde have, you allow someone with sound technique and good intelligence like Levi Wallace to work. When you leave him out on an island, all of a sudden you identify the fact that, oh, he's 5'11", 170 something, and wasn't drafted coming out of college and ran a whatever 4.6 and change 40. And that if you leave him isolated on an NFL caliber receiver, he's going to get toasted. So that didn't change yesterday. It's just unfortunate that twice on both touchdowns, they were able to isolate him and get him out of our scheme and into a segment where he was kind of laid bare. I don't think that changes going forward. We just need to be more disciplined not to put him into that position. And if we are going to put it, get into positions where we're asking him to do that, then we do need to consider somebody who was the 11th overall pick in Kevin Johnson and has the physical pedigree and the short area quickness and the explosiveness to do those kind of things. So I think part of that's just Leslie Frazier being honest with himself and that, you know, what are we asking Levi Wallace to do? Because if it's being, you know, scheme dependent and fundamentally sound, he can play a good role in this defense and he does a decent job. I don't know that I ever see much beyond there. I've said from the beginning of the season, I would love if Levi Wallace was our best depth guy and was the guy coming in a pinch when we need it. I don't love that we depend on him for as many snaps as what we do. But I think he's even performed above that to this point. I think he's had more good games than bad. We're talking after the one where he gave up two touchdowns, and that's you know, kind of unfortunate. But he had plenty of other strong games where he's played well. But anytime you get an NFL caliber receiver isolated on him, it's going to be to their advantage on the defense or on the offense to their advantage. And we need to make sure that we're giving them help.
Yeah, well, and you look at it, right? I mean, in many ways, as I sort of noted before, somebody like Jarvis Landry, as much we as Bills fans kind of despise him for the cheap shots that he's had in the past against our guys on the team, you know, you could see him having some success in an NFL game. Right. It's not one of those things where you would expect him to completely be shut down. It was the touchdown to Higgins, right, that you just saw Wallace completely get turned around. And I think it just brought all of those fears to a head in many ways. Now, for the team, right, you can look at the next two opponents in the Miami Dolphins and in the Denver Broncos. He's not going to be matched up, right, with someone like a Jarvis Landry. You're not going to have Tre'Davious White shadowing someone like an Odell Beckham Jr., at least not for a few weeks, maybe until you take on the Dallas Cowboys. So is there a chance that we can look at these next two games as maybe a bounce back for Wallace?
I'd like to think so. I certainly think that in the first Miami game, Preston Wilson was giving him the business. And he's a guy who a lot of fans didn't know, but actually was kind of a physical marvel, 6'5", 220, and really just had to kind of put things together. He's been put on the IR. You know, Devontae Parker's still a talented guy. Albert Wilson has some deep speed. But yes, I do think that this is a scenario where he should be able to kind of regain some confidence, get himself back into a good position. We don't need to worry about, you know, Tre'Davious being put on an island with anybody. He can kind of stay on his side. We can pretty consistently then leave Levi Wallace on his side and slant the safeties a little bit that way, give him a little extra help, make sure that Milano and Edmonds are, you know, leaning a little bit that way from a zone standpoint, and then let Trey cover a little bit more space and you can kind of cover up for it a little bit. And I do think both the Miami game and the Denver game are games where he can maybe rebuild a little bit of confidence and put himself into a good position. And then we'll just kind of keep our eyes out. You know, I don't think we need to worry about it per se until that Dallas game where you're looking at the combination of Amari Cooper and Michael Gallup and needing to, you know, hey, both guys got to step up. We can't give help because it's going to take Trey all he's got to be able to keep up with Amari Cooper. You're going to have to handle your business with Michael Gallup, and that's going to be another test. But, you know, two games here, kind of get our bearings, get him back into some confidence, and then we'll scheme it up good for Dallas when that time comes.
Switching gears over to the offense just a little bit. Brian Daboll, fans have not been happy, to say the least, right, with the offensive coordinator for the Buffalo Bills. I think a lot of it centers around the use of Devin Singletary, or should I say the lack of use. I'm curious to get your take. I do think this is one of the areas where you see fans probably overreacting the most, at least in recent weeks. And again, you take a step back, you look at some things, you don't consider it to be all on the offensive coordinator, but certainly part of it does fall on his lap. Where do you lay with everything when it comes to Daboll and just some of the struggles the offense has had so far this season?
It's funny. I think I often come off as almost a Brian Daboll apologist, and I'm very neutral on him. I think that he's a capable, intelligent guy. I can't argue with what his history and track record is. That's not ideal. But you know, I'll speak to both sides of it. On the one side, I get a little frustrated where I think he gets overly conservative, and sometimes where I'd love to see him, you know, taking, you know, some additional shots and getting a little bit more aggressive in some areas where I don't understand why he's making some of the decisions. Then on the other side of things, you know, he's taking deep shots on third and three and third and four where, hey, we don't need to try for 40 yards, just convert here and then take your deep shot on first down. So some of those I get a little frustrated, but, you know, in his defense, you know, Brian Daboll didn't call the, you know, Deion Dawkins holding play or the Lee Smith holding play or the Dawson Knox drop the ball play or the Josh Allen throw it behind John Brown play. That's not the play he called into the headset. There are plenty of really good play designs that we got a penalty or didn't execute or the receiver dropped the ball or Josh didn't make the right read. And he takes the blame for almost all of that. And I went back and I looked at the game again because I'm like every other fan. When you look at it at face value and you identify that, hey, you know, what's going on here? We're talking about 45 called passes and 17 called runs. You know, I'm also one of the same people that I get the analytics. I get that this is a passing league and you need to move the ball. And I went back and looked by the play-by-play and it kind of went through the as the All-22s coming out and kind of reviewing where it is. There weren't a ton of obvious situations where, oh man, we definitely should have ran the ball right there. But I would have liked for it to be maybe 25 rushes and 38 passes instead of 45 and 17. Like just a few more sprinkled in there would have been a little bit more effective wherever we needed to do it. So it's nitpicking to try to identify that, oh man, I can't believe that it ended up that way, but it's always easy in hindsight. There are plenty of scenarios where those passing plays got inflated with the no huddle drive at the end of the half and then both of the no huddle drives at the end of the game. And that obviously kind of ratcheted up that ratio, but it's something where I think he takes the brunt of it, but I also think he could be doing a little bit better job to maximize the talent that we have. So it's probably somewhere in the middle, but not to the crazy degree that I think the hashtag fire Brian Daboll was actually trending at one point on Sunday evening. It's certainly not to that degree, but I do think that he could step up and do a little bit better job here. And from what I get, what my interpretation of McDermott's comments, both after the game and Monday, consistently going back to, we need to score more points. It doesn't matter how we need to figure out a way to do this and reference multiple times when Brian and I sat down, when Daboll and I broke down the tape, when we talked about it this morning, that I have a feeling he kind of got a talking to here and was, you know, made very clear that we need better. And that I think that that's appropriate because we do need better. I don't think it's all on him, but he ultimately is the head guy for the offense and needs to find a way to make that happen or needs to adjust if the players aren't reacting to the calls that he's making.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Before we get into the quarterback, let me ask you about Devin Singletary and to an extent Frank Gore, because I think a lot of the, you know, the conversation there has been around the usage at running back, right? And is it the 20 carries for Singletary against the Redskins? I think it was dictated by the opponent, right? Maybe the Bills looked at it and said, okay, this is someone that we should be able to handle with our defense and I dare use the term a little bit conservative, but with this, not just the number of passes used by Allen. I mean, do you think that it is time for, not to say Gore to go to the bench, but really Singletary to get the, not just the majority, but like the overwhelming majority of the touches at running back at this point?
So I'm certainly of the opinion and have been for a while that I have questioned whether Devin Singletary was ever going to be a bell cow back or ever going to be the featured back. And I had some thought that he was always going to be better suited as a complimentary back and that we simply needed next year to upgrade Frank Gore's role with a younger thumper and then use Singletary as a complement there. I will say that the Redskins game opened my eyes to that, and that, hey, maybe there's a possibility that he could be more than that. But I will say that game was 20 carries for Singletary and 11 for Gore. And I don't think that's far off the high end of his usage, and that even how we want to think about him as how he played in that game, you're still talking about a 5'7", 200-pound player, and that, you know, you want to talk about what I think is the ultimate prototype of how an NFL running back should be built, and one of the greatest physical specimens to play in the NFL, you know, in that same game, Adrian Peterson. You're talking about a guy who's 6'1", 220. You're talking about the same thing with Todd Gurley and Le'Veon Bell and multiple other players like that, and that I don't know that a guy who's 5'7", 200 pounds, who's not named Barry Sanders, is a guy who's ready to carry that kind of load in the NFL. So, again, I think he did a nice job in that Redskins game. I'm open to him getting 2/3 to Frank Gore's 1/3. And then, you know, kind of see what kind of talent we have next year at where that plays. But I don't know that I ever see him getting, you know, 30 carries and the number two guy gets 3 carries. I don't think that's what he's physically designed for.
I know it's so premature to talk about anything draft related, but did the Bills need to draft another running back in 2020 really to be that, again, right? You talk about that physical runner in the mold of an Adrian Peterson, and I'm not saying you just pluck someone like that in the second or third round, but the Bills are going to need to get another running back to pair with Singletary, correct?
Oh, 100%. Absolutely, they will. And there's certainly guys, and I'll say I am not a draft expert. I rely on our partners who put in the time and effort there. I am a very casual college football fan. And then all of a sudden, sometime around mid-February, I do a half a bajillion draft mock drafts and try to catch up and understand what the heck's going on in the draft day. But I will say I have had enough conversations with guys like a Joe Marino, guys on my side of the fence with Christian Page and Russell Brown, that there are some thumpers coming up in this draft with Jonathan Taylor out of Wisconsin, J.K. Dobbins out of Ohio State, some explosive guys like a Travis Etienne out of Clemson. But there's some guys, Zach Moss out of Utah is a popular one, that I think there's some bigger, powerful guys, Najee Harris out of Alabama, that we could wait and do very similar to where we got Singletary. So, you know, the best available guy between the third and the fifth round, I think you can bring that kind of guy in. You obviously see that we can add that third running back midway through free agency for $1 to $2 million, just like we did with both Frank Gore and TJ Yeldon this year. So that's what my plan would be. You keep Singletary, obviously, he's on rookie contract and is looking like a good value. You draft another guy in that area, and then you sign a player like a Yeldon Gore caliber. Honestly, even if it's one keeping Yeldon on the second year of his deal, or even bringing back Frank Gore, as crazy as that sounds at 37, I'm fine with that. I think that that's a perfectly reasonable setup, and that you now build that going forward, and then you basically supplement with a cheap free agent every other year, and then in the alternating years, you continue to draft the best available guy between the third and the fifth round, and that if you ever hit on, you know, some fantastic value and you stumble upon an Alvin Kamara or a Joe Mixon or a, you know, a Kareem Hunt or someone like that, who are often found in those rounds of the draft, that's great. If not, you keep churning them out and then don't invest a ton of money in it. And that's how I think you should build a modern NFL running back room.
Greg, while the conversation around the running back has certainly been part of the criticism around the offense, I think you find so many fans divided on the play of quarterback Josh Allen. You talk about yourself being a Brian Daboll apologist. I don't even want to use the term a Josh Allen apologist, but I'm a fan of Josh Allen, right? Of kind of what he went through, getting to the University of Wyoming, then being drafted number 7 overall, the transition that he's made to the NFL, the progress that he has shown, you know, in a relatively short period of time. And really, for me, looking at it and saying, of course, by no means is this a finished product as a NFL quarterback, right? He has shown some great progress, some great potential. I realize there's some that, you know, clutch to the lack of a 300-yard passing game or the lack of a completion in the air over 30 yards. But, you know, when I look at Allen, I see the potential and the progress so far that I feel optimistic. And, you know, tell me if you think I'm crazy. Tell me if you think I'm along the right lines or maybe somewhere in between. But I think that's where so much of the divide has been, because Bills fans, again, right, we have just been tortured by the lack of a quarterback for, you know, for 20 years, that now you come to it and maybe you've got something there, but everybody kind of wants to rush to judgment in this day and age. Where do you fall on Allen?
So I am a huge fan of him as a person. I am really excited that he's the kind of guy I want to be our franchise quarterback. I was completely against him coming into the draft. I was certain that a guy with his statistical profile and lack of reps just was too big of a risk and wasn't going to work out in the pros. I think that some of that is coming to fruition, but I think the development he showed this year, specifically in the short passing game, the accuracy we've seen, the ability to get the ball out quickly, avoid the big mistakes, now going on whatever it is, 130 consecutive attempts without an interception, has really only had one interceptable ball during that time, is a huge improvement over where he had been previously. And I think what it's done is significantly increase the floor that we all assumed he has. Now, the concern is, have they overcorrected to the point and drilled that and drilled that and drilled that into his head about not turning the ball over, not risking bad hero ball mentality? And have they taken a little bit of the magic out of what made him special? Now, I think that that can be a short-term development and a short-term discipline kind of reining it in. And then as he kind of captures and hones and really owns that skill, open back the other part of his game and truly see if we can reach his ceiling. But I will say, and just in trying to be objective to it, I do have a little bit of a concern that I hope it's not an either or option. And I hope that it's not either he dials it back, can only do the short term stuff, really be regimented, focused, keep his mind on footwork, technique, getting the ball out quickly, making those short passes, but maybe lose a little bit of the other gunslinger part of it that he created some of those magical plays, or flip the switch and do all the other way, but put the ball at risk and have some 3 and 4 and 5 turnover games. So I'm hopeful that's not the case. Now, the reason that I was adamant last year in getting to know him, reading about him, learning about him, seeing so many interviews, so many articles on him, and that when you had people outside the organization and outside the fan base saying that he was going to be another bust, another Jamarcus Russell, another Ryan Leaf, another Jeff George, was that I don't think they understood his work ethic, his humility, his willingness to be coached, his interest in doing that, how intelligent he was on the Wunderlich, all those different pieces of it that I thought really mitigated what many of the traditional bust mentality situations were, where people simply relied on physical gifts and weren't willing to be coached and dial it back. So everything in me as a fan wants to tell me that what we're seeing here is very encouraging. He's really raising the lower end of the floor of what we were concerned about, showing the willingness to check down, showing the willingness to take the free yards, to manage that short-term play, and that he's just going to at some point realize he has that captured and then open back up the fun stuff. But there's a piece of me that is concerned about if he can do both. I'm just trying to convince myself that he's really reining this in and owning that piece of it, and then going to unleash the fun stuff that we saw again someday.
Well, and I do wonder with some of it, again, how much is him and how much is the play calling, right? And I don't pretend to be an expert. I mean, I look to guys like, again, Eric, right? Eric Turner from Cover One, who does a great job breaking down certain things after every game. And, you know, as I'll take a look at it, you'll see certain pieces and it's like, gosh, okay, here we are in this situation, you know, coming down end of the first half, you know, do they look a little conservative here, right? You're you're in a situation where you're inside the 20, do you have anyone running a route in the end zone? Or are you really just trying to, you know, have receivers run 7, 8, 10 yard routes? You know, are you playing for a field goal in this position? And again, I don't want to jump on a narrative just because you have a disappointing loss, but you try to look at those things and think to yourself, how much of it is on Allen? How much is it on the play calling? And, you know, again, is there that piece that he can take that step forward where it's somewhere in between those two pieces that you just mentioned?
Yeah, and there's certainly pieces of it that's self-fulfilling where there's a part of it where Dable is partially concerned, hey, is Josh ready to do this? Do I need to protect him from himself and call more conservative play calls so he's not tempted to make the hero ball, where really, you know, maybe we could give him a few more options to do that with a check down option available to him. So I'm certain there's a little bit of it there where Dable's telling himself that he's kind of saving Josh from himself and that he probably could open that up a little bit more. I'm also confident that there's plenty of plays where Dable dialed up something pretty fun and Josh maybe got a little antsy, left the pocket a little bit early. You know, they, as Sam Darnold made famous, was seeing ghosts. You know, some of those pieces of it where I'm guessing there's a little bit of both. I don't, my gut tells me that there's a lot of things going on in Dable's mind to be able to do that. And that I think that he's trying to balance out calling a good game, and that his number one priority might not be on just, hey, what's in Josh's linear progression as a developmental quarterback. So I've had some people question that, and that, hey, should we be pushing Josh through more developmental phases here rather than, even if knowing that him being more of the game manager role in the short term with our defense and the rest of our roster is better for wins now and to make the playoffs, is that short-sighted in that we should be pushing more in the envelope there? And I don't know if I agree with that, but I think there's an argument to that, that if we're going to get to where we want to get sustainably as an organization, that's only going to happen if Josh Allen realizes all of his potential. And I think that can only happen by really pushing his boundaries as a developmental prospect and finding out what he's really capable of to harness it.
Greg, and this is where I feel like I sound like an apologist for Allen. So again, I'd love to get your opinion here. Is the conversation around the deep ball and the lack of the completion so far this season, is this something that's kind of overblown? I mean, I see it from some members of the media, and then it seems like I see it from about 4,000 people on Twitter complaining about the lack of accuracy when it comes to the deep ball. And of course, I think it's something that we would all love to see as fans, but along those same lines, we think of just where the progress has been, that there has been progress made. I mean, is this something that's overblown, or is this kind of along those same lines of what you're talking about, of where he needs to get to take it to the next level?
So I would say overblown is accurate, but it's not nothing. You know, I mean, yeah. I'd love for him to hit one. Now I'd love for him to hit one less so as a fan and more to get people to just stop talking about it. But I will say 0-for-30 is not okay. Like, that's not acceptable. That's not anything that's sustainable. I also think it's kind of a small sample size, and that, you know, the kid has made a lot of really good improvement in other areas, and it's other areas that are pretty much the antithesis of reaching back and unleashing a deep ball. So I get it that his footwork, his technique, his mindset is very focused on, you know, how not to open up his hips wide and miss the short swing passes and how to be able to laser it in there. And I mean, he had a few of those throws against the Browns, and I guarantee you had the same reaction where as soon as he unleashed it, it was just, whoo, holy cow. You know, he has that rifle that he's using plenty of times. He's not losing his arm strength in any sense. And that, you know, is he putting a little bit too much arc on it sometimes? Is he, you know, trying to overthink it with the wind or what the pace of it is? I think some of those things will come. We are still talking about 30 of the 284 passes he's made this year. You know, so we are talking about a small sample size. We're also talking about the, you know, not the very, very best guys in the league. And there are a handful that have a gift for that in Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, some people like that. But there are plenty of really good quarterbacks who have completed 4 of their 30 passes so far this year, or 5 of 28, and I'm looking at a couple others, 3 of 26. That, you know, if he had hit on 3 of these 30, this would be a non-issue. No one would be talking about it, and it would just be like, hey, I wish that was a little bit better. It's just the fact that it's literally 0 that have people freaked out. So, as you talked about, Eric is a fantastic resource. He actually reached out to Jordan Palmer and kind of talked with him a little bit more about, hey, you know, is this just kind of an area you guys haven't had a chance to work on? Jordan said he was adamant that this is simply kind of a dumb luck, mental hurdle kind of thing. And that he thinks once he kind of gets it ranged in and actually hits one, that it kind of could open up the floodgates and that we're going to be in pretty good shape here. He said, you know, obviously we'll focus on that again in the off season, but yes, this off season, so much of their attention was focused on really reining in the short-term stuff, showing people he could be a rhythm accurate short area passer. And they, I think he's done that, and that, you know, maybe that wasn't where all of their focus was, but he said, it's not a capability thing. It's not a physical thing. It's just kind of a mental thing on him ranging it in, not trying to overdo it, probably aiming more than just the natural pacing of it. And that once we do connect on that, he thinks that he'll hit on a few of them and really put it to bed.
Greg, I always appreciate your opinion and your perspective. One last question for you before we do wrap things up. Earlier this week, it was announced that the Week 16 matchup with the New England Patriots would be flexed to December 21st, nationally broadcast game. Not the primetime game, but at 4:25 on Saturday the 21st. Just wanted to get your reaction to that, if I could.
Yeah, I think it's kind of fun. I am certainly a creature of habit. I celebrate the fact that all of our games are Sunday at 1 o'clock. I think that it fits the Sean McDermott, you know, kind of process consistency mentality. I don't personally care if other people watch our team. I don't care if anybody else watches them on Monday Night Football. I don't get more joy out of watching the team win because other people also watch them win. I'm excited because I watch them win. So I personally never get upset or frustrated with, oh man, I can't believe we didn't get a Thursday night game. I said, those games are kind of annoying. I don't personally care. So I was excited with the Thanksgiving game. I think that's kind of fun from a family standpoint, and my family is certainly planning their way around it and figuring out what time we need to eat so we can be cleaned up in time and then have a couple pieces of pie during the game. I think this one's going to work out similarly. I think a lot of families are starting to do some of their last Christmas things. It's certainly changing it. I'm driving up from my home for everyone. It was going to be on that Saturday. Now we're going to drive up on Friday to make sure that we're there in time to watch the game. So I think it's kind of fun. I will see where things are trending. I'd say with where the Ravens have been and the Patriots getting a loss, I think it's very likely that's going to be a fully competitive game that matters for both teams. So I think that's exciting. It was obviously a really good game this past time that we went there. Obviously, we're going to be in Foxborough, so that's a greater challenge that's there. But I look forward to that, and I certainly like those kind of measuring stick games, and I don't mind it. But like I said, I'm very selfish about the team. I want to watch them because I enjoy watching them. I like having the consistency of every Sunday at 1 o'clock. I know what I'm doing and what I'm watching. So I don't need primetime games to make me feel better about what's going on. But if we're in a good position, and ideally at that point, I'm hoping we're going to be, let's say, 9-5 at that point. That I think that puts us in a good position to be ready for fighting for a playoff spot. And if we can sneak a win against them, I think it'll solidify it. And even if we're not able to, I think we can close it out the following week against the Jets, get that 10th win, and lock up a playoff spot. So I look forward to it, but I'm certainly wasn't as excited as many other people were to now get a marquee primetime game. But I respect people that want to spread the love of Bills Mafia throughout the land and let other people enjoy what we get to watch.
Greg, like I said before, I always appreciate your opinion, the interaction that I have with you online, the opinions that you bring, and reasonable takes as Buffalo Bills fans, right? We've got to stick together with these pieces and all your work at cover1.net. But why don't you tell everybody where they can find all of your work, where they can find you on social, just to make sure that they're following you as well.
No, I appreciate it, Anthony. I really do. And like I said, I never miss a Breaking Buffalo Rumblings. I really enjoy what you do and many of your partners over there at Buffalo Rumblings. So appreciate the network and everything you guys have together. You guys can find me on Twitter at Greg Thompson. Really enjoy being able to go back and forth with Bills fans. And, you know, certainly things get a little bit more passionate after a loss. So it's been a funny couple of days here and having some people going back and forth on exactly why we feel that we didn't win on Sunday. But I usually have a great time and really just try to help people see a little bit different perspective of what's out there. And hopefully we can continue to do that. If you haven't had a chance, come check us out over at cover1.net. Appreciate all the fans that we've been able to build so far, and love being able to have the environment that we do. And I know people ask all the time. We always like to go on other people's shows and have people on our show and kind of go back and forth. And it's really the voracious appetite of the Bills Mafia and all the Bills fans that are out there. And I think it's what really makes us special is that if you put good content out there, Bills fans are going to gobble it up. And I think there's room for plenty of intelligent voices out there in the interwebs as we have fun talking about our favorite team.
No, Greg, it's awesome. Like I said, always appreciate the work. Make sure you follow him on Twitter. Check out cover1.net. And of course, the podcast that they do at Cover One. Greg, joined by Aaron Quinn, those guys put out a great show as well, in addition to what you can find here at BuffaloRumblings.com. So that's going to wrap it up for this episode. We appreciate you joining us for Breaking Buffalo Rumblings. On behalf of Greg Thompson, I'm Anthony Marino, and as always, go Bills.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.